words have meaning, and names have power. Sustainable is a word that is trying to find its meaning, so it can have a lot of power.
How much power?
Well, according to Leonardo Academy, if and when sustainable reaches certification, it will affect, it have the potential to affect every American from farm to supermarket. This leads us to ask, what does sustainable mean, and how much power can it have?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 709th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in the Kalu District who are tuned in as we stream along on the radio page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Dave Michaels on the boards. Hello, Dave.
Glad to be here.
Hey, not only are you glad to be here, but you've got your helpers, Princess and Mikey, too.
Right on. Yeah, they are my big helpers.
All right, good. Folks, words do have meaning, and names do have power. My good friend Thomas called the other day to tell me that his business had become certified green. You should get yours certified, too, he said. Well, what does that mean, I asked, and what do I have to do? It's not bad, Thomas said. You just have to recycle all your paper and fill out some forms. The city will then certify you green. Being a student of agriculture and language and literature, I was never much a fan of green appellation. I always favored brown instead, as in the brown of the growth of the soil by Newt Hampson. When you get the brown down, my reasoning goes, the green will soon spring forth naturally. But alas, nobody cared about my becoming certified brown, so I moved on in the quest for new words with which to become affiliated. This quest quickly found myself staring smack into a little war of words over the word sustainable. And the contending factions include some of the top names of American agriculture. For a student of agriculture, language, and literature, this little war of the word was like hog heaven. And so today we pause to ask, what does sustainable mean and how much power can it have? And who better to ask than the people that we have on with us today? And we have a bunch of them. So we're going to start with Bob Young.
Hello.
Oh, I got you. Okay, good. Good morning, Bob. Michael Olson here with the Food Chain. Welcome aboard.
Good to be here, Michael.
Okay, American Farm Bureau Federation. What is the American Farm Bureau Federation?
American Farm Bureau Federation is the largest general farm organization in the world. We have about 6.3 million member families from all over the country, from organic coffee producers in Kona, Hawaii, to potato producers up in Maine, to orange producers in Florida, to cherry producers up in Michigan and Wisconsin, et cetera. So we're all over the country, as well as the standard corn, bean, wheat, cotton, barley, hog, cattle, chicken, you know, the whole gamut.
And who pays the way for the American Farm Bureau Federation then?
Our members. About 95% of our funding comes from membership dues. Our members belong at the county level. The county puts money to the states, and then the states put money up to the American Farm Bureau level. We're a grassroots organization.
Grassroots. We love grassroots. Let's also welcome today Bill Wolf. Bill, welcome to the Food Chain.
Michael, I'm here.
Okay, good. Welcome to the Food Chain, Bill. And you're with Wolf, DiMatteo, and Associates. What is that?
We are a consulting and strategic advisory firm that specializes in the continuum of agriculture, all aspects of organic and sustainable agriculture.
And as I understand it, you go way back to the early 70s and Bucky Fuller days.
Yes, my first work on looking at the issues of sustainability and resource management began with a project that, working for Bucky Fuller in the early 70s, a project coined the World Game, looking at how we use resources to fulfill human need, including food, energy, housing, transportation and other social needs.
And it always starts with food, right?
Well, it's one of the basics.
Michael Olson's first law of the
food
chain.
I would say air first. If we had to start with the first thing we needed, I would go...
For air. All right.
I'd go with air first and then food.
All right, fair enough.
But they're very related.
Well, let's also introduce Linda Brown. Linda, are you there?
I am. This is Linda Brown.
Wonderful, wonderful having you aboard. Welcome to the food chain. I have a little bit of fuzz here, so I'm going to have to juggle phone lines today.
Okay.
And I think I fixed that, maybe.
Yeah, I guess that if you were trying to call my number, the phone never rang.
Well, sometimes it's just a mad dash here, so we're going to work this out and see if we can pull it off here.
Great.
Linda, you're with Scientific... Scientific Certification Systems, right?
Yes, systems. That's correct.
Now, what is a Scientific Certification Systems?
We're a company that is focused on providing and conducting third-party certifications for environmental and sustainability claims in the marketplace. We've been at it for about 26 years.
Okay, good. And now, all of you are or have been associated with the Sustainable Agriculture Standard Development Committee, correct?
Yes.
Okay, Bob, you are no longer associated with it, correct?
No, I have never been myself personally, but our organization has been. The gentleman that we had working on that is actually leaving us and going back to his family farm.
Okay, good. So the organization is no longer involved in this
We are as an organization. I just personally have not been, but I've been very involved in the Keystone Field to Market sustainability effort.
Okay, so we're all involved in this, and away we go here today. Words have meaning and names have power, so let's dig right in here to the meaning of the sustainability. Jennifer Trucks, who is with the Sustainability Standards Development Project at Leonardo Academy, says the following. If and when sustainability reaches certification within the American National Standards Board, it will potentially affect every American from farm to the supermarket. That's a lot of people. A lot of power for one name, but before the word can become a name, the word has to have meaning. So what does the word sustainable mean? According to the Sustainable Agriculture Network, SANET, there are probably over 600 definitions of sustainable. How will one decide which one of those 600 definitions will become the legal one? Let's start with you, Bill Wolf. How does this going to work? I've just got to press the button here. Go ahead, Bill.
I think the starting point is to think a little broadly about the term sustainability as...
Well, 600 definitions is pretty broad.
Well, yes, but defining it begins with the principle that it is an aspirational goal for continuous improvement, that we are always striving for that goal, and that the purpose of defining sustainable practices is really a purpose of defining metrics that we can use to measure our performance towards that continuous improvement. It is not something you attain and then stop.
Yeah, but if you were going to tell this lady that's walking in front of the studio right now what exactly that meant, what would you tell her?
I would say that the purpose here is of defining and working on measurement tools for sustainability is similar to measuring one's carbon footprint or measuring one's gasoline mileage, that we want to improve our behavior in all areas of sustainability, all three key components being not only the environmental behavior but also our social interactions and our economic, how we use our resources both in the social sphere, the environmental sphere, and the economic sphere.
So in other words, we want to improve our mileage on how we treat the environment and how much it costs to do that and how we get along with each other. Kind of
how sustainable our relationships with, yes, the social and the economic, how we utilize the funds. And it's not a simple equation.
Well, 600 definitions times three different qualifications. It's getting pretty complicated. But maybe Linda and Bob can help us out. When we get back from this break, folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson here. We're talking the word sustainable and the effort to make it, turn that word sustainable into a name that has a lot of power. What do you think is in the name sustainable? With us today, Linda Brown, Executive Vice President, Scientific Certification Systems, Bill Wolf, President, Wolf, DiMatteo & Associates, Bob Young, Chief Economist, American Farm Bureau Federation, and you right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, folks, the Sustainable Agriculture Network says that there are over 600 definitions for the word sustainable. Bill Wolf says, well, there are three different components being measured for what is sustainable. So let's go and talk with Linda Brown from the Scientific Certification Systems and figure out how on earth you could certify something that is so confusing. How is that going to work, Susan? Good, Linda.
Hi. You know, sustainability has been defined, as you say, 600 different ways, but essentially when we talk about sustainability, we're referring to the ability of the current generation to meet its needs without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their needs. And that's essentially a definition that...
I like that.
That's an internationally recognized definition. It's not the only definition because, of course, when you apply that basic definition to different sectors like agriculture, we need to start giving it some more specifics, some more teeth. But essentially, we're trying to act in a way that doesn't compromise the needs of future generations. So from a certification standpoint, it's a big task. We're looking at a lot of different factors. But I will tell you that in agriculture, there have been many different initiatives, retailer initiatives, grower initiatives, you know, different sectors that have developed their ideas of sustainability. And what we see is a lot of commonality. Mm-hmm. We see commonality in the concern for preserving the quality of water, preserving the quality of air, being energy efficient, and thinking carefully through the use of packaging resources. All the considerations you can imagine, looking at how labor employees are allowed to work in a safe and healthy environment.
And it seems like almost everybody's involved in this sustainable thing, from Walmart all the way down to the local farmers market association.
And you're right. You know, and I think it's a reflection of the fact that we all have become much more aware of our environment and the potential problems, you know, the end of oil, for instance, you know, the questions about global warming. There are so many loss of species, you know, wholesale extinctions. That makes people aware of the need, whether you're a Walmart or a grower or a consumer, that we all share this, you know, world together. And so you see these initiatives becoming more prominent, not just because of awareness, but because of an awareness that addressing these issues can also make good sense From a business standpoint, that's why farmers are already engaging in a lot of sustainability activities.
Sure, and probably always have been, because they're in the business of sustaining their business for next year.
Correct. They're stewards of the land.
That's probably where it starts, yeah.
That's right.
But let me ask you this. In for this word to be able to certify somebody or is sustainable, the word sustainable has to become a name, and for that to happen, it has to develop some kind of solidification, right?
Let me answer it this way. Sustainability, as Bill mentioned already, is really an aspiration. It's a goal that we all share.
Mm-hmm.
How we get there is by defining. We'll never get there. There's no end to this journey. We live on a dynamic earth.
That sounds dangerous too, though, doesn't it?
Oh, I don't think it's dangerous. I think it's exciting. We live in a dynamic world where we have to always take into consideration what's coming next.
Yeah.
And what we can do is we can provide a roadmap. We can create awareness. As a certifier, this is one of the most important things we hear from growers that we work with, is that they're becoming more aware, and standards can help them become more aware of their options, of the steps they can take and the metrics they can use to measure their success toward their goals of sustainability.
Okay, speaking of growers, let's go to Bob Young, who represents growers all over the place, all kinds of growers, big and small alike. Bob, what does this sound like to you? How are you going to justify all of your different kinds of farmers with this concept of sustainability?
Well, I wouldn't disagree with much of anything that's been said.
I wouldn't either.
I think that the question becomes, though, is when you try to try to mandate particular types of production systems as parts of this word. One of the challenges that I think we face is that an awful lot of folks have tried to run down the path of saying that it has to only organic production is sustainable production. And that's just not true. We've got members that are growing cranberries in bogs in Massachusetts that have been growing cranberries on those same bogs since the late 1700s. They think they're sustainable. Well, they're definitely not organic producers.
You certainly hit on the good one here, because what separates the words sustainable and organic? Organic used to be a word that had no meaning, like sustainable. But then the nation came together after a significant amount of hooting and hollering and gave it an official meaning. And once it had an official meaning and parameters, then it became a name, and it became the focus of a mega-billion-dollar-a-year industry. So how will the sustainable word become the sustainable name and follow in the footsteps of organics? Is that where we're headed, Linda?
What?
Well, I think sustainability has broader applications, and certainly within the Sustainable Agriculture Standards Committee, there is a broad agreement that it's committed to inclusivity, to including all growers and enabling them to find the path toward better and better practices that sustain the environment, their workforce, their communities, and their profitability.
But then if it's so inclusive, what is there left to certify?
The certification, and I don't want to. I think that the focus on certification may be a little bit beside the point. Certification is something one does.
I guess I'm coming to that from the organic world. You know?
Okay. Well, certification of a standard. One doesn't certify before there's a standard to certify against.
Right.
And in this area of sustainable agriculture, organic agriculture addresses a number of production practices. Labor practices are not part of the definitions of organic. Issues such as water degradation, while certainly an outcome of organic farming, is not specifically addressed definitionally in organic farming. And others on the phone can probably speak to this more effectively than I can.
Let's go to Bill Wolf then and see if we can get Bill to answer that question, because Bill's been tracking this definition and the various definitions, and has been involved in the organic industry since the get-go. So what is the difference here, Bill?
Organic is a production method that is a process-based standard and has very specific technical requirements. Some organic production is more sustainable than others. And as in being involved in helping people get certified organic, the measurement of sustainability is not one of the primary factors, except in some components of behavior, such as crop rotations, biodiversity, soil care, mostly on the environmental side. As Linda pointed out, the organic standards that have been now embedded in the USDA National Organic Program and the programs around the world are primarily the environmental factors in production. And I would agree with Bob that organic is not the only sustainability approach to agriculture. However, I think that as we get into the other criteria, we need more measurable metrics for the organic community as well as all of agriculture. And specifically, when you look at, for an agricultural system such as the one Bob referenced regarding cranberry production, or a system that's been in operation for hundreds of years, we have to look beyond the boundaries of that farm.
But we have to do it after the break. Folks, this is Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking sustainability with Linda Brown from Scientific Certification Services, Bill Wolf, Wolf DiMatteo and Associates, Bob Young, American Farm Bureau, and you. Right back. Welcome back. So, is it possible, I guess, for organic farmers to be unsustainable, or sustainable farmers to be unorganic? Bill Wolf, what do you think?
Well, I think that organic has laid the groundwork for, is one of the best starting points we have. But as I said, it does not focus per se on sustainability alone, and it does not cover the other two very important legs of the stool of sustainability.
Which are?
The social and labor components, how the workers and the community interfaces with the production methods to assure that the practices are not exploitive and are sustainable, number one. And number two, that the use of resources from an economic point of view are cycling within the system in a truly sustainable way, and not leaving the system in such a way that we no longer have the economic resources.
As in, like going to China.
As in going to China. I mean, that's a very good example of questions about sustainability. I have visited agricultural systems in China. I think that one of our challenges is that we are hurting ourselves as a species by not having those social, environmental, and economic components at the table when we measure our purchases and our movement of goods.
Okay.
We have to look at the downstream effects. We have to look at whether we're creating
which is what Linda got to, right?
Exactly. Right. I mean, are we polluting the water that we then have to clean up later by simply having cheap food? Are we polluting the air? Are we using resources in such a way that it really isn't sustainable?
Well, let's go to Bob Young. Bob, what do you think?
Well, I think one of the challenges that we face is that a lot of these different production practices and these lifestyle production practices that are talked about, you know, do bring a cost to the table with them. They, you know, it is just a fact of life that it is, in many cases, a more costly production system than the systems that we're using today. There's reasons why we've gone to some of the systems we're using today. And part of the challenge that you face is when we're talking about fruits and vegetables or a product where you do have traceability throughout the system.
Are you there?
Are you there? Sorry.
Go ahead.
You can put systems in place that will allow you to establish that cost chain throughout the system all the way to the consumer. But on a lot of other products, you know, take corn, for example, you know, once it leaves the farm, it's, you know, it's a they're commodities by definition.
Sure.
And so to not have, for those products that you don't have identity preservation systems, you have to talk about another approach to how you're going to handle sustainability. And so one of the ways that we've been coming at that is let's talk about metrics. Let's talk about, is the system getting better? I think, again, if you sit down with any farmer, if you can say, you know, look, if you farm this way instead of farming that way, the economics are the same or the economics are better, but at the same time, you're going to have less of an environmental footprint. You'll find farmers will be some of the first people to make that kind of move without being told.
Because it's economically in their favor to do so. But
and they live where they farm.
They live
too,
where they farm,
know.
Yeah. But some of them do.
Most of them do.
Most of them do,
the
okay.
Great majority do.
Fair enough. But they seem, what Bill and Linda seem to be getting at here is that we must think beyond just the economic viability to the social and the environmental viability, too.
I wholeheartedly concur, but if you're not economically sustainable, you ain't no sustainable.
Good point. So let me go to my second point here, and that the Leonardo Academy suggests that if and when sustainability reaches certification with the American National Standards Boards, it will potentially affect every American from farm to the supermarket. How would it do that?
Well, again, I think if you're going to talk about mandating production practices, and I think that's where one of the real challenges has come in that effort that kind of seems to be grinding down, if you will, or certainly at least has come to a pause point. If you're going to mandate production practices, you know, you need to think pretty hard about you know, how you're going to tell people to farm. And if you better have lots of good, solid, on-the-ground experience in that process and developing those standards.
Well, here in the California, where we're hanging out today, where the food chain emanates from, we have a situation in which there are two government agencies pulling at farmers from both directions for environmental reasons. One government agency wants the farmers to plant riparian quarters along drainage ditches in order to purify the water runoff. The other government agencies wants the farmers to remove all of the foliage along the riparian corridors to prevent animals from habituating the area and pooping in the fields to protect us from E. coli or whatnot. So
now you know how the farmer feels.
Okay, Bill Wolf, how do we deal with that? Thanks, Bob. How do we deal with that?
Well, I think that those are good examples. I think we have to go up to 30,000 feet and look at the last 150 years of soil systems and say, you know, what was the when we go to commodity production, for example, corn and soybeans, mm-hmm. and say, How would this system of measuring the metrics and performance affect commodities? The concepts that have been discussed at the Leonardo Sustainable Agriculture Standards Committee has been that we would be developing measurable metrics, and that those metrics would be used so that any farmer would have an on-ramp to start measuring their practices. And that those measurements would be pretty clear tools that would give us a scorecard. The scorecard would include everything from you know, soil quality, mm-hmm. which if you go back 100 years and say what was the depth of soil in how many feet of topsoil and what was the organic matter and the microbial activity in the soil 100 years ago versus today, we would see that we're on a very
cashing in the chips, right?
Cashing in, we're using up our chips to feed ourselves today.
Well,
let
me ask you this: it seems like
we're on the planet in a very simple way. Am I helping to increase the number of earthworms per acre worldwide?
Right,
and that's one of my personal metrics. And
well, you're talking about worldwide, and one of the things that always troubles me about the environmental community is that they preach that we must be clean, and then they run down to the box store and buy made in China. And what you're talking about is worldwide. So if we do something here, and then if we enforce this discipline on us here, but then run down to the box store and buy made in China.
Well, that's why I said that the metric has to be a measurable tool that's a like a business-to-business tool for the processors to use when they make their decisions. I don't necessarily see sustainable as a consumer label as much as I see it being a tool for businesses to be conscious of their purchasing practices.
Okay, we're going to pick that up when we come back with Linda Brown. And I'm a brownie, too, so hang in there. We will be right back on the Food Chain. Well, words have meaning and names have power. Sustainable is a word that is trying to find its meaning so it can have a lot of power. And that's what we're talking about today with Linda Brown, Executive Vice President, Scientific Certification Systems, Bill Wolf, President of Wolf DiMatteo Associates, and Bob Young, Chief Economist, American Farm Bureau Federation. Bill made an interesting point that the metrics have to somehow be applicable to the worldwide, because that's the world we live in. Linda, what say you? Are you there, Linda?
Yes, I am. The phone cut out there for just a moment. Well, what I was about to jump in and suggest is that it might be useful to talk about some examples, and I'm sure all three of us on the phone have good examples of sustainable practice or practice that's moving in the direction of sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so important that we start to really begin to define these terms, as you've been talking about all along in this program. So an example is one from my own backyard. I live here in Napa, California. My husband manages a farm that produces grapes for wine. And what I learned over the past few years is that a number of the farms are not aware of the dangers to their workers and to the environment from burning treated lumber stakes that are pulled up out of the ground. That knowledge hasn't been transferred down to the farmer level. Mm-hmm. And so this was a common practice in the valley among many of the people who were pulling stakes out of the ground to pile them up and burn them, leaving heavy metals in the environment and exposing workers to potential dangers. So just that kind of an education, that very specific example that a standard can provide, saying that this practice of burning treated lumber stakes is not a good idea, is a great way to begin the process of moving people toward more sustainable practices, making sure that those stakes are pulled up and properly disposed of.
Yeah, you know, I could jump in here too. I think another good example, if you look at the data that we've and how farmers have been progressing over the last 15, 20, 30 years, you know, we collect information on a very broad grid pattern across the country about how folks are performing from an environmental standpoint, the National Resources Inventory. And if you look at that data, and also understand that soil in a field, just because of wind, just because of plant breakdown, just because of a lot of things, you know, generates its own dirt as well. You know, that dirt that you find under the bed when you know, I just cleaned under here last week, and yet you still find dust bunnies, that kind of stuff. You know, soil does regenerate itself after a particular period of time.
Especially,
and we've now found actually that the soils were, because of production practices, that on average we're now losing soil at about the same rate that the soil is regenerating itself on a national average basis.
And probably that would be a sustainable soil then, right?
One could make that case, could they not?
Let me make a case for the converse. And I was having a conversation with a berry grower who talked about how they get much bigger berries south of the border because they don't have the same rules we do here. What they do is to encourage fruit set, they douse the plants with sulfuric acid and denude it, and then they hit it with a growth stimulant, gibberellin, that vastly increases the size of the berry. So when we go into the market here in America, we see these big, huge, beautiful berries, but they're really not, that doesn't sound like a very sustainable practice to me. So I guess what I'm getting at, I'm trying to get back to where what Bill was talking about, is that we're developing these standards here in the United States, which is making it really difficult to become a business to be a bit in business here in the United States. Much easier to go someplace else to produce our food. How are we going to square this up? Bob, let's start with you.
Well, that is a challenge, and I think we do need to recognize, as we do go down this road, that, you know, it is a global marketplace that we're working in. We can talk, say that we want to erect this barrier and erect that barrier, et cetera, but, you know, it's, by the same token, we want to be able to sell our products there as well. So we do need to recognize that as we begin to talk about, again, mandating production systems, and I think that's one of the real challenges that we have. I'd also say, too, that, you know, one of the challenges that the organic production systems have had is that I think in their early days they were very, very much viewed that it was a lifestyle choice, that it had to be small in order to be organic. And clearly we've got producers that are demonstrating that as long as we define it as a process, which it is, then, you know, what difference does the size of the operation matter? And so that's another challenge I think that we're facing, too.
Good enough. Linda, how do we square this drive toward sustainability with competition in the fact that, you know, we can go down to the box store and buy these things from foreign lands that are not sustainable, but they're sure cheap?
Well, it's a good question because it really implies that we need to have more education about the relationship between farming and food production and the environment and all of the issues of sustainability. And what we're seeing over time is a growing interest, consumer interest, in making informed choices and making choices that integrate their values. And so the numbers of people who now say that they take sustainability or environment or other factors into consideration other than price alone, that number is growing, notwithstanding the recession, that people are increasingly aware that their choices matter and that where they spend their dollars matter. I wanted to address one point that Bob made.
Can you hold it until we get back
sure
from this
can.
Break? Okay, folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking about sustainability, a word that can have so much power. It can affect us all, from farm to supermarket. That doesn't leave anybody out. So what do you think is in the name? Right back after these messages. Please do stay tuned. We're back, and Linda has a follow-up. Go ahead, Linda.
Yes, I wanted to address the fact that the standards development process that's currently undergoing in development with the American National Standards Institute, ANSI, is a voluntary standard. It's not a mandate. And I know that Bob has mentioned the term mandated production practices a few times, and mm-hmm. I think it is important that this is a voluntary national standard that's being developed in light of the fact that so many other private initiatives are being put forward, retailer initiatives being put forward, and other initiatives all trying to get at sustainability. It makes sense that we have a common language, and having a national standard that can begin to get at a common language, take advantage of all the good thinking that's gone into all these other standards development initiatives, but bring it together under one house, is a way to help take out some of the confusion, get all of the voices at the table, the multi-stakeholders who have an interest in this, whether they be producers or food companies.
Linda, that seems like a good idea, but I've read that 10 major organizations like the American Farm Bureau Federation have dropped out of this discussion. So, Bob Young, why?
Well, let's just say that some of the production systems that were being proposed and being pushed probably caused us some concern. You know, for example, one of the provisions that was being got a lot of discussion was about, you know, and let's just go ahead and talk about the elephant in the room, about the genetically modified crops and things of that nature. Again, for organics, that's one that's precluded from being, mm-hmm. And, you know, we we think there's a lot of reasons why you want to go down, be able to go down that road, frankly, from a sustainability standpoint. And so there, that's just one. There are others that could be on the list. And again, I've not been involved in those on a daily basis.
Right.
Linda has been, so she could certainly get more information on that than I could.
Bill Wolf, looking down the road 50 years, we have a national standard for sustainability, and we have a whole organization designed to manage sustainability. Will farmers have to be certified sustainable and certified organic and certified green to survive?
No, I see these as choices that producers make in order to provide measurement tools for their practices. I want to address a couple of things here that are kind of examples of that type of measurement, and also express some serious concern about something Bob just said.
Well,
first of all,
go for the serious concern, because we only have like a minute.
Okay. Well, I'm embarrassed that the Farm Bureau chose to leave this process. I'm a member of the Farm Bureau, and I was not consulted. The local and state chapters weren't consulted, and the standard that was evolving did not exclude GMOs. It provided that we were going to develop measurable tools for looking at all practices, including, you know, things like can farmers save their seed, which GMOs precludes.
Right.
One of the key measurement tools I really want to address is the nitrogen cycle, and the fact that we really need to get back to looking at the fact that air in the atmosphere is the majority of mostly nitrogen, and yet we're buying and shipping nitrogen, and that involves cycling.
And we have to go pick this one up on our next program, which I'd really like to do with you, Bill Wolf. Maybe we can talk about Bucky Filler. Folks,
can I say one thing? I'd really like to invite the AFB back to the process. That would be an awesome change.
There you go. Linda Brown, thank you. Bill Wolf and Bob Young, thank you for joining us on the Food Chain.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Folks, stay tuned for more What's Eating What Radio next week. Remember, cheap food isn't.
Been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.